What are some of your favorites?
Wave petunias are great. Yeah. Profusion zinnias are terrific. Let's see, what else works really well? excuse me. Oh, what's that one I'm thinking of right now?
I'm laughing because I just had dog issues, and now Amanda.
Yes, I'm having some dog issues.
That's what I hear in the background.
It sounded like my stomach growling. It's a husky.
Podcast verite.
Yes, that's right.
I had to close myself in the guest room because my dog was jumping everywhere.
I heard Daisy. I heard her.
Okay, keep going. Annuals.
And so I'm trying to think of another one. Begonias, like wax begonias.
From Kiss My Aster Studios, this is the Gardening Girls Podcast with your hosts, Amanda Thompson and Michelle Gervais.
Welcome to episode of the Garden Girls Podcast. Thank you for being a friend. So this is episode 2, episode 1. That went really well, it seems.
It did.
People are enjoying it with really nice feedback. It took a little while for it to show up everywhere, but now we're getting reviews on Apple Podcasts. And if
we have reviews?
Listening wants to... Yeah, we have one review. By Yay. Someone named Otter or something, and I maybe I've made a mistake there, but I think it's Otter or something, and I really appreciate that. And because Apple reviews can be funny, like they could even the good ones or the bad ones, they'll tell you, even a bad Apple review can give you a really good idea that podcast could be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm pretty excited.
Sorry, we'll tell you who's speaking in the background in a minute.
That's right. We'll get there. Okay. We'll get there. I'm building up to it. So I'm Amanda, a.k.a. Kiss My Aster, and Michelle.
Yep, I'm Michelle, Gardeny Goodness.
Gardeny Goodness. And we host a vaguely sweary podcast as garden professionals and people who are also know-it-alls.
Self-proclaimed.
So episode number 2, Michelle, would you like to introduce our very first guest?
Yeah, I'll introduce our first guest. So I'm going to be mysterious first. This is someone I've known for a long time, way back in 1992, 1993.
Wow,
what
God,
do you think?
I can't
Maybe
believe
1992?
It. Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah, you were my horticulture professor at Virginia Tech.
Right.
And I remember you so well because you were one of those professors you learned from and had fun with both, which was, you know, not a rare combination, but not completely common.
Right.
But I loved having you as a professor. And
Thank
many
you.
Years later, when I was working at a magazine, I edited a couple of articles that you wrote for me.
That's right.
And that was a great experience. And that's when you told me I had to call you Bob because I was a grown up now. Still makes me uncomfortable.
Were you calling him,
it's still a little awkward.
Were you calling him Dr. Lyons?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That is a little awkward.
I have former students in their early 50s now that are still calling me Dr. Lyons.
It's hard to switch. It is. Okay, so we've already let the cat out of the bag, but you are Dr. Robert Lyons, a.k.a. Bob. And welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So
thanks for being our first guest.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, so when we were trying to think of people with compelling garden stories to tell, we've been friends on Facebook for quite a while, and your name came to the top of the list for me because you have a really compelling story, and it fits with the theme of this podcast episode, which we've decided is resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, let's talk about your career. Let's introduce yourself in detail.
Okay.
Don't hold back. Tell us about your horticulture history.
Okay. Well, I mean, it kind of all started for me in my probably my junior year of college at Rutgers College at State University of New Jersey. I took a botany class, and I had been a biology major, which I enjoyed very much. When I took botany, though, everything seemed to make sense. And I said, this is exactly within the field of biology that really has captured my interest strongly. But I knew at that point I had to make a decision, either stick around for another undergraduate degree in botany or go to grad school. And so I applied to grad school. I got money for a free ride. So I said, well, of course, there's no choice here. So I'm going for a free ride. Somebody else is going to pay for it. So I did and went off to University of Minnesota and absolutely loved it. My first exposure to Midwest, first exposure out of the state of New Jersey, which is pretty big, as you know. New Jerseyites tend to be a little bit self-sequestered.
Minnesota is great.
Minnesota is great. It's a big state. It's farming. It's all about farming, and I learned so much about that. But I learned about plants even better in horticulture, and that time I got the bug to, well, I wanted to teach, and I wanted to teach at university level. I had come to that conclusion when I got my master's degree, and I stayed on. I was lucky to keep my funding, and I got my PhD. And from that point on, Virginia Tech was the second place I applied to, got an interview, and took the job.
And you were there for how long?
I was there for 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long time. At that point, Jeez. You kind of think you're a lifer, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah. So what, you went to North Carolina next, right?
Right. So NC State had this opening, which I knew about, J.C. Ralston, very famous plantsman, had very unfortunately perished in a car accident. And so they were now looking for a person to replace them and also guide the new arboretum that was developing. I really had no interest in it right off the bat, but I saw it and I was kind of curious because it was a very big position to see who was going to get it. And after they went through the first round of interviews, it didn't really work out. So they went out, they get put on hiatus, and then they went out again. And I was contacted directly to come down. And at that point I said, you know what? I think I'm going to make this move. It did fit one of my criteria in life, is that it was to keep moving south.
Really?
I hate winter. I loved Minnesota, but I couldn't stand another winter there.
See, I'm the opposite. I kept moving north.
I know. I couldn't do that. At that point, that was right into my own personal formula. So I did. I decided to make the move to NC State University, the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, where I became the director and distinguished professor, and was there. Really did probably the most significant thing I did was help them build all the office buildings. We had a big campaign. We had raised millions of dollars and built these staff buildings and educational rooms and support facilities. And it was really a significant thing. And I really thought at that point I was going to stay there forever because things were really starting to roll together for me, and that I was really getting my feet more than wet. And then I started to get some phone calls. And one of those phone calls came from up here at the University of Delaware in Longwood Gardens. They were faced now with the retirement of the director of the Longwood Graduate Program. I knew about that at Virginia Tech. I sent five of my students, had gone through that program, were accepted and got through. And I was thrilled with it. And so the opportunity to become the director of this was just too good to be true. So I did go on the interview. It was a pretty intense interview, offered the job. And next thing I know, I'm moving back up north. Not part of the plan.
That's not the north, though. You're still kind of
the Mason-Dixon line is literally 1,000 feet from where I live. So.
Oh wow, and you're above it.
I'm above it.
Oh no.
So
you went from one amazing garden to another. So you've been surrounded by seriously gorgeousness.
I did, but forever. You know, but the Virginia Tech Horticulture Gardens, which I had started with two other faculty members, was really pivotal in my whole professional development. So without that experience, I wouldn't have gotten a job at NC State.
Right.
I just couldn't. And I'm thrilled that the garden at Virginia Tech is now named the Hahn Garden because a big benefactor helped them out.
Yeah. But it's grown so much since I've been there.
It has. And it's absolutely terrific. It is, it's got these, probably the most significant aspect about it is this alley of Trident maples. And we put them in as little whips, like 2 feet in size. And I have this photo of like one of the students watering this thing with a hose and a gush of water's coming out. And it's like submerging the tree whip. And today they're exactly the way we envisioned them to come out when we did the plan in 1984.
Oh, that's so gratifying.
Yeah, I guess.
We're going to have to put a picture of that on the Facebook page because that's amazing.
Yeah. I credit that experience. I mean, it was almost suicidal for me, actually. I usually tell people because it wasn't something that was being highly credited in my advancement as a professor there, but it was a very important project to me from the teaching perspective. So I kind of stuck to my guns, but I did what I was expected to do and I advanced to the system.
And I'm sure they're very thankful now.
Yeah, in retrospect, they love it. I mean, people use it as for functions. They use it for recreation. They use it for education. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's right now because campus has grown around it, has grown up and around it, which is really terrific. Yeah. I love going back there.
So you've had gardens this whole time, and I remember when we were at Virginia Tech, you had a garden there at your own home. What kind of gardens have you had along the way?
Well, I think there's a common thread here. I am a person who, within the world of horticulture, I'm known as a herbaceous plant specialist. So yeah. I taught herbaceous plants for my whole career for 34 years. But every year at Virginia Tech, I had a 2-semester class, which at the time was unusual in the country. Most herbaceous classes were 1 semester in duration. And after trying that once or twice, I said, I can't fit it all in. So I went and I proposed a second course, and that's what I did for the majority of my time at Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do, is focus on herbaceous plants. So annuals, perennials, tropicals, things of that nature. But I still use woodies as a bit of a backbone or accent plants in my garden. But I think if you saw threads of each one of my places where I lived in Blacksburg, where I lived in North Carolina, where I live now, there's a real similarity.
Plant packed. You have so many great plants.
Yeah, I'm a real cottage style gardener. Some people would call it congested. Some people call it crowded or massive. But it's a cottage style, which is, of course, borrowed from the British. I don't care what people say. Some people say that the British style is going out of fashion. It's my style. I love it, and I will always use it. It's just known for, you know, plants growing together and leaning on one another and just really kind of bursting in color.
Bursting at the seams with color. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So how long have you lived at the property you're at now?
Right now, I came here in 2005, so we're looking at 14 years, which is amazing to me.
Yeah. And the reason why we asked you on for the theme of resurrection, you're gonna tell us the story of why we chose you for that theme.
Sure, you ready to go?
Oh, we're ready.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, it is I tell people, because it's a pretty poignant story in retrospect, but it is a situation that you never get over it, but you get past it. And so in my case, I came home in 2009. It was May 8th of 2009. I came home from work, and there was somebody working at the top of my driveway, and I was curious about that. So I left my car parked at the end of the driveway. I lived on a cul-de-sac. And so I walked up the driveway, and the guy told me that somebody had called in the fact that they'd smelled gas in the area, in the environment. And they came over, and as the gas company, this is propane gas company, and they came over, and sure enough, they smelled it too. So they figured, and I never got a phone call or anything. They couldn't contact me. So they just went ahead and did this. So they started to transfer the gas out of the container at my house into another one, so that they could then find where the leak was, because people were smelling it. I got home, and, you know, I'm up there at the top of the driveway talking to the guy, I can smell gas. And I said, well, can I go in the house? And he said, yeah, go in the house, but if you smell gas, come out. So I walked in, and I really didn't smell any gas or anything. So I started to turn the house on, you know, hot water, microwave. I'm starting to cook dinner, TV goes on. And for whatever reason, which is a mystery to today, I just decided to, about a half hour later, decided to walk out of the house and see how he was doing, the technician. And he said he was fine, didn't need anything. So I then walked down to my mailbox where my car was parked and decided to get the mail, which I did. And as I turned back around and started to walk up the driveway, about halfway up, the entire house exploded right in front of me. It is in retrospect, I can remember it. I will always remember it. It was like shrapnel peeling off the building. Debris was falling around me. I was like in shock. And so my neighbors were running all directions. They came and pulled me back, because I was pretty close to the house at that point. And it was a disaster. I mean, everything I owned was burned up. The house burned completely to the ground. There was nothing left. Even the foundation was completely exploded, because it was a gaseous explosion.
Oh, I have chills.
Yeah. And from that point on, the gardens were a complete mess. And everybody thinks that, and I did too at one time, that, you know, gardens are contemplative areas and areas to kind of reflect when there's a tragedy or disaster. But for me, going back to that house and trying to rebuild gardens and think about gardens immediately was the complete opposite of what I needed at the time, because every time I looked at them, I was reminded of what just happened.
Yeah.
And at this point, remember, when you lose everything, that means everything. So I'm wearing other people's clothes. I'm being tapped on my back by the Red Cross, wondering if I need a place to stay. I have no identity because my wallet was in the fire. So I have no ATM card, no access to cash, no way to prove who I am. And mind you, I had 5 graduate students that had to be graduated in 1 month from that point on. And so there then begins the story of resurrection, of trying to rebuild at that point. And there were some real highs and real lows of it. And the gardens didn't really figure in very much for a good year because, and I tell people this, it's hard to believe now because people see what I do. But I lost all interest in horticulture. I didn't want to do it anymore. And same thing with photography. I'm a professional photographer. And I'd lost 25,000 images in the fire. And so all my equipment was in the fire. And so I just said, you know, the last thing I want to do here is rebuild this stuff. I mean, I need to get on with my life and do other things at that point. And I really kind of joked with people that at that moment in time, I could have walked away, quit my job, and become someone else because there was no way to tell otherwise. And believe me, it did cross my mind.
Oh, wow. So you started with rebuilding the house though, right?
Yes, I did start to rebuild the house, but I had a real big fight with my insurance company and they did not want to come through on what the policy was. Right. And so I had to get an attorney and so I had to get through that process. It took 2 years. Go ahead.
At what point did the gardening bug start coming back? When did it start to mean something again?
Probably when I saw the frame of the house go up, because mind you, when this all happened, you know, I kept telling myself, why is this happening? I had nothing to do with this. This was not my fault. And yet this was a horrific disaster unfolding in front of me. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, where's the practice? You don't get practice doing this. And so, but when I finally, we pushed the insurance company to come through, we were able then to start framing the building because I had been working with the architect. And as soon as I saw the frame go up, I started to think about the gardens that possibly could surround the house. Mm-hmm. And so it was at that point, which was a good, you know, 18 months, that I started to regain some interest.
Wow. So where did you start?
I just started to formulate ideas, just conceptual. You know, I would walk around the house as it got more and more detail on it by the framing. And then, and I love the house and I've pictured it on my Facebook page many times. And as I started to kind of walk back and forth and see what the house was doing as it was constructed, I then started to get ideas. But one of the major parts of the house that wasn't even part of the original plans has become a major focal point of the garden, and that's the stairway in the front. And the stairway is constructed of old stones. The house is very much in the old Pennsylvania Dutch style of stone and stucco. And the stone actually comes from an old barn in Chester County that collapsed. And so we collected that stone and used it on the house and the steps. And so the steps have now become a walkway through this really big garden space on both sides. And it's one of my favorite places to come through, but I didn't really imagine that until the house was completely done.
Yeah. So how different is the garden now from when you first created it?
Totally different. It's, it's different in that before, there were vestiges of gardens on the property already. And I was trying to work with them and I was trying to salvage some of the plants, which I liked. I wanted to keep them around. And so they were starting to build some gardens that were kind of gardens built around some of the plants rather than a design and then the plants to follow. Mm-hmm. So when I got into to that phase of basically the gardens were ruined from the fire. I mean, literally there was not a single garden left after the fire, whether it was trampled or flooded or burned up. I mean, my backyard was very shady at the time, but the fire killed all the trees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So now the backyard turned into a full sun garden, which that's completely different than what the backyard garden was before, which was all shade. Mm-hmm. So very, very different. But I will say that the backyard, what I tried to do this time in rebuilding the gardens was try and look at different styles. And so that while the front is very cottagey and very herbaceous based, the back is what I call suburban backyard, which means it has a deck. It's got foundation plantings. It's got repetition in linear positions. you know, it's up against the wall. It's like perfect. I mean, it's like, this is suburbia. And it's got a grill on the deck. Yeah. And so it's exactly what, you know, people take a lot of hit for, because it's supposedly not very creative. But I think it is very creative because of the plants that I used.
Right. So is there any positive to this in regards to the garden? Do you feel like you had some fun with the blank slate, or was it painful? Like,
it was never painful. It was absolutely never painful. It was really pretty exciting. And, you know, in this business, as you know a lot of people, and excuse me, our business tends to be fairly generous. And so in my house, I had a lot of people in the plant world that were wanting to give me plants. Yeah, so I got, but some of them I had to turn down because I really didn't want them.
Yeah,
that's hard to do. It's hard to turn down free plants.
Yeah, but you mastered the art.
Right.
Yeah,
and so it was kind of funny to see that. But then I was able to kind of get a few plants here and a few plants there, ones that I really, really wanted. And I was seeking them out and finding sources and kind of saving spaces for them. So it was very different than before, but I'm happy because I got some really unique plants. Like a couple, when I was at NC State University, there were two very gifted plant breeders there, Denny Werner and Tom Ramey. And both of them had created just some exquisite new plants by just classic breeding methods. No GMOs, no genetic manipulation. It's all moving the pollen over to the stigma of another plant. And what I got from Tom Rainey was a hybrid of our Franklinia. It's now called Excordolinia Sweet Tea. And it is, since I killed three Franklinias before, and I just won't do it again. I'm tired of killing them because they want to die. They want to go extinct. And so this, however, is a winner. It's got strength and it's got vigor and it flowers. It's in flower right now. It's got very neat magnolia-like, actually a very Franklinia-like flowers, and it's beautiful. And then the other one from Denny is a Cirsus, a redbud, which is called, oh, great name, Flamethrower.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah, and so Denny gave me one of those. And so I've got both Sweet Tea and Flamethrower, and those are very unique plant specimens. Not everybody has. I dare say nobody within 50 miles of where I live has them. So,
Amanda, we have to get pictures of those.
Yeah, we do.
I can send them to you if you want. Pretty cool.
We are relentless in seeking those out from you. How long did it take you overall to make the gardens?
You know, I think as you talk to a lot of people, they're never really finished. And so
that was my next question. Yeah,
it's not, it's evolving, and I'm still making changes. Like, I'm adding things or I'm taking something out. Like, for example, I wanted this daylily, which is called Hyperion, which is one of the very best of the golden yellows. And it's been around for decades. I think it was developed in the 50s. And I really wanted that. I wanted it in one particular place. So I bought it thinking it was labeled as such, and it wasn't, it was mislabeled. And I said, this isn't what I want. And so I'm going to move that out. And now I know a source of Hyperion. So I'm going to move that in. So there's a case in point where I'm just making adjustments. But I'm a big fan of using annuals and tropicals as placeholders. So, you know, and I don't know if you remember this, Michelle, in class, but I would always say that, you know, annuals are the band-aids of the landscape. You know,
I always say they're the croutons of the landscape. Well, there you go. We can get along on that.
Yeah. And so what I do is I kind of like will plug them in where I'm not sure what the perennial might be in the future, or even what the woody might be, but I got to fill it with something. So I jam in some annuals.
What are some of your favorites?
Wave petunias are great. Yeah. Profusion zinnias are terrific. Let's see what else works really well. excuse me. Oh, what's that one I'm thinking of right now?
I'm laughing because I just had dog issues, and now Amanda.
Yes, I'm having some dog issues.
That's what I hear in the background.
It sounded like my stomach growling. It's a husky.
Podcast verite.
Yes, that's right.
I had to close myself in the guest room because my dog was jumping everywhere.
I heard Daisy. I heard her.
Keep going. Annuals.
Yeah, annuals. And so I'm trying to think of another one. Begonias, like wax begonias. So I throw them into. Yeah. And so things like that are great. They're instant color. They grow quickly. They are guaranteed to be blooming all the time. Yeah. And they do the trick. Now, next year, or even this fall, I might say, okay, I remember, I now know what I want to, never to come back in that spot, but there's something more permanent there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love annuals. I have so many favorites that I use to just really fill space. Like this year, I am in love with Lace Flower, Amumagus. It's just this big cloud of white, and it just, I filled a bunch of spaces with it, and I love it.
But doesn't that self-sow for you?
This is my first year. Now I'm scared.
I'd watch it if I were you.
My front yard is filled with it, but I mean, the first time I had it in my yard, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to let it go, but I do, because this is like, there's a weird lull right
okay.
now.
And, yeah.
You
yeah.
know,
but is it as bad as Perilla?
No.
Well, I have a lot of that too. They look great together in a bouquet. They look great. You cut them off and put them in the vase.
They do. Yeah. Okay. So what are some of your biggest plans for your garden in the next few years?
Well, I will say there's one part of the garden I haven't talked about yet, and I want to complete it, and it's called
coniferous.
It is called the deciduous conifer grove, and that's the conifers that drop their needles, and there are 5 genera of them, and the one that I don't have is larix. So larix, metasequoia,
and taxodium.
Taxodium, taxodium is another one, and so I have them on the side yard, and they look terrific, but I've got to get that one last one, and I've been looking, and I'm trying to get some friends to look for me, and there's a native, it's Larix deciduous, one of our natives, but I can't seem to find anybody that has their one willing to sell it or give it to me. So
which one is the one that has the knees?
That's
taxodium.
It could be taxodium, it could be metasequoia, Glyptis verboides, right. Right. Yeah. And actually several of them can have knees in wetter areas. So I'm trying to do that up. And then the backyard, the kind of classic suburban thing is pretty much done. I like that. But there's more to the backyard, and that is where there's no turf, and it's really natural. And it's very loose. You know, I was trying initially to kind of do the Pete Udoff type of thing, and it's just so hard.
It's much harder than it looks.
Oh, yeah. And that, so far, it's a failure for me. So,
don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of people are all excited about it. First of all, I want to tell people, you know, it's not exactly new, because we kind of had this rage back in the 80s. People were looking at meadow gardens and stuff like this. It's just that it came up with some new twists, and now it's kind of gained some popularity again. And I'm not bashing it, but I think it's just harder than it's made out to be.
Yeah, he's famous for a reason, because he's one of the only people who can do it well.
Yeah. It's quite amazing. And I mean, just to deal with the invasives and to deal with like the seedlings, it's like, ay, ay, ay.
Yeah. And I feel like after a few years, you just have to wipe it blank and start over again.
Just kill it all with Roundup and just start all over again. Yeah. And while you're at it, throw some pre-emergent herbicide down too. So,
yeah.
So I think that would be areas that will require some real attention. But the front yard, which is where the steps are, the stairway, that's just minor tweaking right now.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, Amanda, should we go to some questions?
We should. I think we should.
Okay.
Are you willing to sit through our grueling, difficult questions, Bob?
Nothing can be harder than teaching about 30 undergraduates herbaceous plant materials.
I'm telling you,
it's so hard.
Michelle's question asking skills, they're grueling, tough questions.
And Michelle, you can only ask them, what room number were we in for that class?
We were in the classroom in the greenhouse.
Oh, really? Is that where you taught your class?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were down in 102 Saunders.
I was in Saunders for most classes, but I remember very distinctly being in the greenhouse classroom.
I taught a few semesters in that classroom. I did. And the reason why I got kicked out kind of is because we had another class that had more sections that needed it. Wow. So you're actually one of the rare classes which was taught up in the greenhouse.
Well, it was a long walk, let me tell you.
It was. And I had to do that too.
Okay. So hit it, Amanda.
Okay, last week's question was, what 3 plants are making you, not last week, but it was like our last podcast, what 3 plants are making you the happiest in your garden right now? And I think we should stick with that question.
Okay. Well, okay, one right now is an Altissima daylily. It's just the line of daylilies that are derived from the species Hemericalis altissima. And there's probably 5 or 6 hybrids out there. But what makes them so cool is that This is a cultivar. There are five or six cultivars of it that bloom very late, well past the point where a lot of the dahlias have finished up their flowering for sure. And they're very tall comparatively. So they're about 6 feet tall. They have tons of flowers.
6 feet?
Yeah.
What color are they?
You have the classic yellow. You have kind of a classic orange. Then you have like a bicolor of like orange and russet color. Those kind of like fall tones that you're going to see.
And the foliage still looks good?
Yeah, oh, it's fine.
Because
yeah.
All my daily foliage is kaput now. It's gross.
Now, do you know a clever trick on that? Go ahead and cut it back.
No.
Oh, yeah, what? Cut it all off. Cut it all off. You will thank me for this.
Cut that far down.
Just the stubs, you know, cut it down. And then it's going to it's going to come right out with the beautiful fresh leaves.
Yep. What? It's true, but you can't, like, I mean, I worked in landscaping for 300 years. You can't tell a customer, I'm going to cut all your daylilies all the way down to the ground. It doesn't work. But
commercial
if you're
horticulture is way different than residential.
Oh, yeah. Culture. Even residential, it depends on their income levels.
Yes. And like I would often tell my students, like, this is something I would do in my home garden. I would absolutely never sell this to a client.
Right.
You know, but in the case of cutting back your dailies, I would tell the client, look, here's where I'm going to do it. It's not on your property. Go ahead and take a look. Watch it through the next few weeks or so. And this is what we're going to convince you.
Yeah. Yep.
So anyway, things back. Oh, sorry. I'm going to interrupt for just a second because I'm going to ask an expert opinion. I have this fear of cutting things back, but I've gotten much better and I'll actually prune my shrubs now. But I have a question about a plant that actually is making me really happy right now is my cut leaf coneflower. I think it's Rudbeckia laciniata. I know it's a thug. It's taking over my garden, but I do love it. It's in full bloom right now, and it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Can I cut that back earlier in the season to make it shorter?
The big rule of thumb here is yes, you can. It's just it's called the July 4th rule. So you can do that with that plant. You can do it with Eupatorium, you know, Joe Pye, New York Ironweed, what's the other one? Goldenrod. And if you do it no later than July 4th, you'll reduce the height by 50% and you might get a little delay in flowering, but it will flower for you.
Really?
Oh yeah. Okay, I did it to my Joe Pye this year and it's working beautifully.
I need to do it to my Joe Pye too, because it's completely blocking my path to the door.
It'll work.
I just hit it with the lawnmower.
Yeah. You could do
the
that.
The lawnmower.
Or you could be more careful and do it at 50% of the plant.
Amanda's much more fearless than I am.
I have none of the fear. You need to stop it, dog. Go away. Oh, man.
Okay. So
she's like, a lawnmower? How dare you? Right, go away. Go away. Go away.
That's funny.
What are your other two? Oh, come on, Laika. Come on. The whole family knows I'm making a podcast right now.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, come on.
We're not editing this out. We're really
I don't
not.
Know what I'm going to do.
Who's that?
That's the dog.
Oh, God.
She knows she's been summoned. Okay, what are the other two plants that are making you happy right now?
Okay, two other plants. One that I have in my planters right now is tricolor cotton.
I've seen that one at Ted's greenhouse. Yep.
Yeah, it's like a rose color, white, creamy color, green, broken pattern. It's really pretty, and it will also have flowers, kind of pinkish flower, and it is now setting cotton balls. So that's all in one plant. Yeah, it's great. It's really different, unusual, and the nice thing about it is a tropical that doesn't grow really fast. So it's a nicely controlled tropical plant.
Well, I remember when they had ornamental cotton come out a few years ago, they had that really dark one.
Right.
Yep.
But I feel like I tried to grow it once and it wasn't a very graceful grower.
It's not graceful and it's not quick. It really hangs around for a while. It doesn't grow very quickly. This is a better one. It has got more vigor. It's got more vigor to it.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to look for that one.
Okay.
I love tropicals. What's the third one?
And the third one, let me kind of quickly do a thing in my head here. It's going to kind of belong to several cultivars, heucheras, basically. You know,
they're looking good right now.
Right. And so I think the heuchera villosa and its hybrids.
Yes.
We've been through a fairly dry period, like 4 weeks of really no rain here, and it's been very hot. And you look at the heucheras, which are in dry shade, which is underneath deciduous trees, and they're still troopers. I mean, they're still growing, they're still erect, they're not They're not wilted down to the ground, and they're flowering now.
All of them are the villosas.
The villosas I'm going to dwell on as the best ones. I think the ones from the Pacific Northwest are nice. They just don't have the staying power. I don't think
the villosas. Yeah, because all of mine are looking horrible right now, except for my one villosa, which is kicking butt.
It's the best. It's the best. And like caramel for me is like the best of the cultivars. And brownies is another really good one that I think works well. So those are that whole group. And I actually let villosa do a little self-sowing, what I call editing garden at my place.
Yeah. Neat.
Michelle, what's looking, what's making the happy, making you the happiest at your house?
Well, there's the, definitely the cut leaf coneflower is making me happy, even though it's out of control.
Yeah, but it's only out of control because other people think it is. It's your garden, so do what you want.
I know. Well, people come in and they absolutely fall in love with it.
Yeah.
So
that's
it's
a
out
huge
of control.
Problem.
But it, yeah, it's a huge problem. I have to fix that. But I did just plant oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Cirsus canadensis redbud behind that cut leaf coneflower this spring, forgetting how big the coneflower was going to get. So that's why I was asking the question about cutting it back.
Oh yeah.
So I can barely see that tree, but it's beautiful. What else is looking good? Mandy, you answer one because I'm still thinking.
It's a cheesy answer, but it's also such a one size fits all answer that I don't feel bad about being this cheesy, but my lime mites are looking so great now.
Yeah, the hydrangeas.
They're about 4 years old, maybe 5 years old, and they've reached, you know, peak capacity, and they're just really the starring, you know, and I don't do anything for them. I don't cut them. I don't protect them. I don't do anything for them. And I think that's a real struggle for a lot of homeowners who want hydrangeas without any maintenance. And I just think limelights are all that.
Yeah, they last forever. And I don't think
they last forever.
I don't think they're given the credit that they really deserve as a landscape plant.
Agreed. Sun, shade, water, no water. They really just, they really are plants that work very hard.
You know, I did think of another one that's unusual, but it's really doing super well for me now. I don't know if you've ever heard of a dancing crane ginger.
No.
A Zingiber myoga dancing crane. And it's a kind of a cane-like ginger. And it's got longitudinal stripes of variegation on it. And it's a very slow growing ground cover, but you know, ground cover that's 2.5 feet tall. But it's again, a trooper for difficult sites. It's more shade loving than sun. And so it's in a great spot. And it's just a really unusual, it's got strappy leaves on it. You're not going to see the flowers because the flowers were right at the base of the plant. They don't flower on the stems.
What zone
like
is
sun.
That?
I'm in zone 6B, maybe 7A, something like that.
All right. That makes sense.
And so like, I don't think you can do it. Okay. But Michelle, you're up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Zone 5-ish.
I'm in Chicago.
Maybe you could try it. I may be at the northernmost limit of it, but I would be willing to give it a try up where you are. But Amanda, I think it'd be a little bit too cold up there.
Yeah. Yep.
You're
up
in Chicago,
not
right?
Even,
Yeah.
Not even super close to the house. Yeah, I wouldn't try it.
Right.
What else do you have on your plate? Yeah, we'll do that. We're going to get that. what else do you have, Michelle?
One thing starting to rebloom, my major weeder, honeysuckle in my arbor.
Okay.
It's amazing in the spring. I know it's been around forever. It's not exciting to most people, but this thing, it's just like a beast on top of my arbor, and it's starting to rebloom. So that's making me happy. The Joe Pye weeds, of course. Mm-hmm. I really need to look into some shorter ones. I think I have the pretty standard one, and it's towering probably 8 feet.
But
tall
I think
right
even
now.
The short ones are not terribly shorter. You know.
Yeah.
I think you have to consider them a relative term for size, because you know I've tried some like. Oh, I can't remember. Little Joe, I think, is one of them. It's like
how big was that one? Because I was going to ask about Little Joe.
Not so little.
Not so grew little. Up.
You know, and if it's in a really good site, which is kind of moist soils and everything, it's going to really grow. That's what it really loves.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually saw that, a huge mass of that along a river in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago. And I pointed to it and I said to my husband, that's the Joe Pye weed that we have in our garden. He's like, what? What's it doing there? Like it's supposed to be there.
That's right. Where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
In my garden, my moonflowers, my Datura I just have such a. It's such a cheap and easy plant. It's so not special. And yet it is, it's just like fireworks. I love cloudy days where they, mm-hmm. where they never go away. And they, I just think they're really cool. And mm-hmm. I don't ever stop thinking that they're pretty cool.
So that brings us to another question for this week. And we'll try to keep it short because we've been talking forever. What is a plant that you wish you could grow, but you just can't?
Yeah. I can pinpoint one exactly. The blue poppy, Mechanopsis.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
I mean, absolutely forget it. It's just
you have to live in like one county in British Columbia to grow that, I think.
Or Alaska.
I had a landscape customer who was a multimillionaire, and he wanted that in his front yard. And I was like, God. Not even your money can make that happen, dude. There's nothing. And that's what I love about plants. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You still can't have that, buddy.
Right. It's and you know, every good horticulturist has probably killed it three times before they understand that you cannot do it.
Yeah, just give up.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're not going to learn.
What's yours, Michelle?
Well, mine is, of course, the monster Gunnera manicotta.
Oh, I love that.
That's on my list too.
Oh, dinosaur skin. That's what I call it.
I can't water that much.
Did you ever go on any field trips when you were at Tech with Mr. McDuffie?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I think he was just starting to get them going in the 90s. So you might have exited just before it all happened. But he started to make annual field trips with undergrads. And one was to San Francisco and Gunnera was there.
To San Francisco? No, I never went on the field trips. Those sound great.
Yeah.
No. But a garden I used to work for, not very far away from here in the Hudson Valley, had one. And it was the size of three elephants. It was huge. And every year... when it got cold, they would cut all the leaves off. They would cover the crown with the leaves. They would surround it with an insulated box, and they would fill the box with mesh bags of packing peanuts.
Are you kidding
me? And they would cover it up, and it's been growing there for probably, I don't know, 30 years now. And it's massive.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's
the Garden Girls' first field trip.
Yeah, it's firmly in zone 5. It's on top of a windswept mountain, and it's cold up there. And it's massive and huge. It's right next to their pond, and they put, you know, manure tea drip line on it constantly. And it's got its feet in the water, and it is the most glorious thing I've ever seen. And I was at a garden show once, probably 10 years ago, and I got one. And it was a tiny little 1 gallon pot, and it had three leaves. And I was so excited. And I brought it home, and I'm like, I'm going to put it in a big container. I'm going to water and fertilize the hell out of it, and I'm going to make this work. And it lasted 2 months.
Yeah, that's me and Rodgersia. Oh.
I have good Rodgersia in my garden, I must say. I have two clumps of it, which are outstanding.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's not easy. Once it gets established, it's really on its own. But getting
I can't establish. I'm not a waterer.
It's tricky.
Yeah, I'm not a waterer either.
Yeah. Once you have a kid, it's like either I feed the kid or I keep these plants alive. What's it going to be?
The plants.
What's yours, Amanda?
Well, on that note.
Was it the Rodgersia?
Oh, mine is the... mine was the chocolate mimosa tree.
Oh,
I'm so close. I'm so close to being able to have it. And that's... I don't have a lot of zone envy. But they had it in the ball test gardens out here once, and I think it overwintered 1 year and didn't make it the second. And it was like, oh man, we're so close to being able to have that.
Say, do you know, I am
the chocolate mimosa tree, I should say.
I'm curious. Like, so you're up in Chicago.
Kind of dark. Yeah, kind of dark, but still fluffy. You know, like that's me with pink pom poms, you know, like
that's
just, it's just who I am. Yeah.
It's stunning. I don't know how much you interface with the ball people, but do you know names like Brian Corr and Will Healy? And
no, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
They all hide from me.
They're much older. That's why.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Those are my only connections back to ball.
No, I technically am a freelance writer for ball.
Okay.
But I have no actual ties over there.
Okay. Curious.
Not that I wouldn't want to change that, ball. If you're listening, we're looking for sponsors.
Well, this was so much fun.
That's great.
Thank you so much for coming
on.
Thank
you so much for joining us, Bob. And,
yeah,
and
you're welcome.
What a story.
It's an interesting one. And what I try and do is every year on the anniversary of the fire, which is May 8th, I will post a picture of the house in flames, right juxtaposed with the house today. So it's always a nice thing. And like I said, you have to move on from these things. And gardening works, but not right away for me. Yeah. You know, friends and family are what do it. I mean, and I'm fiercely, fiercely independent. I live alone. I'm single. I love that. And accepting help from people is not my strong suit. But if you do not, you're going to be in trouble this for sure.
It's a good life lesson.
Yeah, it really is. So you have to loosen up and then you will get through it. In fact, I talked to somebody, two people, as a matter of fact, during the process whose homes also burned down. And they both said, look, you're going to get through this. Don't worry about it. But it's not going to be easy, but you won't get through it. And they were both right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I wouldn't, here I am, I'm a minimalist now. And, you know, I lost a ton of stuff in the fire, antiques and collections, and all my books were signed by authors. And, you know, those are gone, but I don't dwell on them. And at least they're in my head, they're in my memory. And so that's what it is. So I live a very minimalistic life in the new house, which is fine. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Collective deep sigh. Wow. It's just like, I'm just like sitting here in my basement looking at all this junk and you've given me really something. Wow.
If you look in your basement, if you look around you in your basement and you look at boxes that you have no idea what's in those boxes, you could throw them away and never miss them.
You're right.
It's true.
You're right.
It's true.
Totally.
You know, so that's, I tell people that. And if it did anything to me, I'd become more impatient with people that get bothered about the tiniest things. Like if you misplace your keys and they get frantic about it. I said, just relax already. You'll find the damn keys, you know? It's like you lost your house. I mean, that's a little bit bigger.
Not only did you lose your house, you watched it happen.
I did.
That's the perspective.
I did.
Barry landed right there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I can see it where it's like, you know, just about anything in the world is small potatoes.
Well, and I will also add that, you know, my job had me connected with Longwood Gardens very closely. And at the time of the fire, I mean, they were like the best people. So they have tenant houses on property and they're furnished. And so they said, here, we've got a place over here for you to stay.
Oh,
so
that's so nice. You know,
so
that's a nice Band-Aid.
Yeah, otherwise, so nice. Like, where are you going to go? And you needed it furnished because I sure didn't have any furniture to put into it.
Yeah, you don't want to live in a hotel room.
Right.
Forever.
So that was a godsend. Ooh. And I really owe them forever.
Oh, that's so nice. Good people at Longwood.
Yep.
I like hearing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there really are.
All right, let's, on that note, which is a little bit more uplifting than the note we were going to end it on a minute ago, let's wrap it up. And thank you so much for joining us, Bob.
Okay, my pleasure. Happy to do it. And Michelle, you sound great.
And we don't have a website yet, but you can look for us on Facebook. We'll put pictures of the things that we talked about today.
Okay.
So the Garden Girls on Facebook, and we have an email, but I'll never answer it. And where else can people find us?
Oh gosh.
You can find us on our
individual
personal,
blogs.
Individual accounts, Gardeny Goodness and Kiss My Aster.
Nice.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
See
Thanks, Amanda.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.